My guest in this part of the Predictions 2011 Hour is former eGov Administrator Karen Evans. Hello, it's nice to talk to you for the last time in 2010, my friend.
Yeah. How exciting is this? I'll have to end and say, talk to you next year.
Yeah.
This time of year when you get to say that.
That's very clever. That's clever. Nobody gets tired of that. All right. So you are thinking about a couple of things here for 2011, and we're going to start at the bottom and work our way up to the top of the list, and we'll post your list later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, just like all the others. Mobile technology. The thing that I think is interesting about what you're predicting for mobile technology is not just the computing capability per se, the ability to be productive, but some of the other elements that you think are going to be wrapped up in mobile technology and government this coming year.
Well, yes. And what I put in here when you asked me to think about this was authentication, and because these devices are already deployed and doing things, a lot of people keep thinking about, well, the HSPD-12 is out there, which is Homeland Security Presidential Directive 12. They automatically equate that to smart cards. And what you can do now, and you could do this for a long time, is that you could actually do, there's devices with biometrics or your smartphone itself and those types of things like that would be used as the ability, you could use those to authenticate yourself into the network and get access control. And I think these devices and the deployment of this are going to become increasingly important, and I'm sure everybody else has talked about this, is they're going to have to solve this problem because WikiLeaks is highlighting that we have the issue of access control.
Mm-hmm. What are the broader implications for WikiLeaks from a, not just a technology perspective, but from a workforce perspective?
So I kind of weave that into several of these different types of things because that's going to be the big example that I think everybody goes back to. But part of the what's happened and part of the lessons learned or how you want to talk about this or going forward for our predictions is it's going to affect information sharing, but I think when people look at that example, they're saying, oh, it's going to shut down information sharing. But I actually think what it's going to do is move the pendulum to the right discussion and really get to where we should have been after September 11th when all of these things were happening. People were saying it, but now you have to do it,
mm-hmm.
which is the roles-based access. You know, does a private really need to have access to State Department cables? I think if you looked at his job and looked at what he was doing, you'd say no. But should he know that that information exists? You'd probably say yes. So he should be able to search it, take a look at it, and then if he had a need to access it, he should request authorization.
Is that balancing act, though, something that where you can ever reach a point where you feel comfortable, or is this something that is going to be an ongoing change, evolution, pretty much forever, because there will always be different kinds of information and different people who need access to it?
And it's the latter. So that gets to one of my other predictions about people, and I put things in here about the workforce, and I broke it out into several categories. So there's going to have to be a specialized group of people who are always analyzing this and putting the solutions in place. Then the other part of this is just the general workforce itself is going to be more educated and have to learn more ways about finding out information. The easiest way to do this is to put the database online and make the information accessible to everybody. So what you're assuming is people who are on the inside can be trusted. But that's not the case because there's really not a perimeter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think that way, that there is no perimeter, then your solutions and how you deal with risk and how you use technology to manage that risk is constant evaluation, but it's also a different paradigm. It's a different shift.
Mm-hmm. What is that shift, and how do you get your arms around that shift? Because it sounds on the surface of it pretty daunting.
Well, it is very daunting, and this is the stuff that the first go-around right after September 11th everybody was dealing with. So everybody said, okay, fine, we're not really sure what information you need to have access to, so we're going to give you access to all information and put it out there. Now you can kind of ratchet that back. They started ratcheting that back maybe a little bit more and saying, okay, maybe you take a look at, and this is, it's basic types of things like audit trails. How often is that information actually accessed? Well, we were supposed to be putting audit trails on systems and financial systems and IT systems since the Computer Security Act. So I bet you if you go back and you look at a lot of these things, audit trails aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a look at how often is the information used, how is it accessed, who is accessing it, those types of things like that, that's the type of architecture, for lack of a better term, that needs to evolve and really take a look at that. And we used to talk about it as information management. That's why I said this is, you could come up with a bunch of different titles for this, but, you know, maybe we'll get it right this go-around. But it is another go-around of that. It's another, you keep coming back and you keep coming back to the same issues, and but technology keeps improving. So therefore, I think our circle is faster now.
Let's go back to the information sharing piece for a minute, Karen. If I think about it the way that you talked about the information sharing capabilities and just the worldview of information sharing in government, where we went from the pre-9/11 to the post-9/11, in that environment that you characterized a moment ago, where a lot of information was being made available and just kind of broken out there, in that context, nobody, I think, should be really surprised that WikiLeaks happened in the manner in which it happened, should they?
See, and in my view, I would say no. Now, and I agree with you, they should not necessarily be surprised, because if you take a look at this, and, you know, everybody was like, oh, my gosh, VA. Remember when VA lost the laptop?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, the reason why that came about and everybody was shocked is because he lost the laptop. But if you step back and really look at that, this is a person who had access to 26 million pieces of information.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same situation. How many years difference is that?
Yeah.
What's the impact of that? Okay, this one was on national security. The last go-around was on individual veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same problem. It might be different type of information. It's the same challenge. It's the same types of things you have to really think through. Maybe they do need it, but you should have it available so that they know it's there. But if somebody's attempting to get 26 million pieces of information, alarm should go off and say, hey, does this guy really need to have it? And he should justify it.
It's interesting. There's been a subset of people who I think have been kind of mischaracterized as opponents of progress. But this subset of people has been saying, wait a minute, this transition that we hear about all the time from need to know to need to share, maybe we shouldn't do this quite so quick. Maybe we should think about the process of doing it instead of just opening the barn doors and letting horses run free. And that's why when WikiLeaks happened, I certainly wasn't happy about it, but I spoke after it happened to a number of people who said, hey, remember I told you? And I was able to say, yep, that this is, and that's why I say I'm not sure we should have been entirely surprised.
Well, and that's true. And those people, you know, you can do the glasses half full or the glasses half empty, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And do you err on the side? Because what happens if you didn't have that information out and you take WikiLeaks aside and you have somebody else who said, well, gosh, that information was sitting in a database, and if you had it out there.
Yeah, if only we had known, yeah.
If only we had known. So, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking is very easy to say, and the other thing is that they are predictors. There's those folks who have lived it and saying we should step through this in a diligent way and think about it. If you look at a lot of the think tank reports that came out and a lot of the things that came out, they didn't say just put everything out there.
Right.
They did say do it in a very deliberate way, but information should be searchable and discoverable.
But isn't it fair, though, that the implication was, yes, do all these things, do them diligently, but really do them as quickly as possible. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And it wasn't, and it, to be fair, pressure wasn't coming from your branch, from the executive branch. The pressure was coming from Capitol Hill.
So now we're back to predictors and technology and using technology in a way to enable programs and things. Okay, well, the easy way is just to put the database out and think, well, gosh, the SIPRNet is safe, and so anybody that's on that, they're trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not the way to think about the problem. You know, so that again gets back to this is a paradigm shift
mm-hmm.
in the whole way that we use technology. So the solution, the way that they approached that solution was, well, there's an inside and there's an outside. So if I put it on the inside, I'm safe.
Mm-hmm.
But if you also look at all the other indicators that were out there, and every single cybersecurity report says 80% of the problem comes from insider threat. So should you have been surprised about WikiLeaks from that perspective too? No, because every report says that 80% of your problems come from inside.
Karen Evans is my guest, former eGov administrator on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking about predictions for 2011. And when we come back, this prediction, the next prediction on your list is, sounds to me like your take on more with less. And we'll dig into that with Karen Evans in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
I don't know, maybe you're one of those individuals who doesn't want to save money on car insurance. Maybe you're an alien from another planet. Maybe on your world the words saving and money have no meaning. Well, I feel sorry for you. But around here, if you want to save money on car insurance, you switch to Geico. Just like 4 million humans switched to Geico last year. Welcome to planet Earth.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Well, job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Half Price D.C. Holiday Clearance Sale is on now. Gift certificates that were already half price are now up to 94% off face value. That's up to 94% off on gift certificates to restaurants, spas, stores, and more. The Half Price D.C. Holiday Clearance Sale ends January 2nd, and supplies are limited. So buy your gift certificates today. Clearance sale prices up to 94% off face value only at halfpricedc.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Dell, and AVIEW Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Attention! If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-400-7910 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue your current eating habits. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-400-7910. That's 1-800-400-7910. 1-800-400-7910.
The Dorebeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorebeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorebeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorebeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Predictions 2011 in hour number two of each show this week, and today no exception with Karen Evans, former eGov administrator, and now mom preparing for Christmas. Is everybody going to be around for the holiday?
Yes, they are. I'm pretty excited. I'm in the home stretch wrapping my gifts.
You're one step ahead of me because I haven't wrapped a single one yet. So good for you on being more organized. I always thought, though, that high-level officials are much more efficient at that kind of thing than radio talk show hosts. So I'm not surprised by your efficiency. We're doing predictions, as I said, for 2011. And your prediction number two is great cross-collaboration and leveraging existing investments. It sounds to me like a very nice way of saying you're going to have to use the stuff you already got because you're not going to get much new stuff.
Yes. So what I did was, when I was sitting here putting these together, I really thought a lot about this from performance and deficit reduction. And I really believe that agencies, especially with the changing environment on the Hill, are really going to have to demonstrate why they are doing what they are doing. I mean, this is the easiest way to explain it. Is it a core business function, mission function of that agency? And then if you look at it across the board and start analyzing who is in that business line, then who does it the best? And who should we be investing in to do this service for the government as a whole? So I've talked a little bit in my detailed notes about they're going to have to work more as an enterprise, because I think what you're really going to see now is that the citizens are not really going to care what agency is doing what, and we've said that for years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to matter now, because they are going to care if you're paying for the same service for three different agencies to develop a solution.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that information sharing, we talked a little bit about information sharing, and you included that as a component here when it comes to investments, too.
Yes.
What's the effect of the money on information sharing efforts over the next year to 5 years, say?
So there are a lot of multiple investments out there. If you start looking at things at the FBI, for example, or Department of Homeland Security, and what I started to see toward the end of my tenure was one system, one network. And that's just really not going to work, and because that's a huge investment. And you're going out to the same types of population. You're going out to the same local jurisdictions. And the infrastructure cost needs to be optimized. And the services associated with that is, what it really comes down to is you're really going to have to look at who's at the other end and what kind of information do we need to make available to them. So I link that back again then to access control authentication using existing devices, because especially at state and local levels, they are not going to be able to do a big investment to be able to come in and tap into federal information. You're going to have to use some of the infrastructure that they have and put on technology that allows them to authenticate and then access information. So they don't have huge budgets either. So what's going to happen is this greater collaboration of what are really the requirements, what do we really need so that you can optimize that investment. This is really great for cross-government types of activities, because the lack of funding is going to drive that cooperation.
That sound that you hear, by the way, is that ah sound, is the sound of people applauding the idea of silos breaking down all across government if your prediction comes true, Karen.
Well, they have to. I mean, I really believe, now this might be wishful thinking on my part, and that's what we were talking about a little bit earlier, but I really believe because the money is not going to be there, all the reasons that people use to keep those barriers up are going to have to go away out of necessity, because state and local governments don't have the budget. You're seeing that all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, California is a great example. They can't sustain those services. Hard decisions are going to be made, yet the citizens are still going to have the expectation that government is going to be able to renew my driver's license.
Right. Yeah.
Those types of things.
Do you think there's finally a sense in the federal government that that's where we are? Because it seemed I've been following the government for at least a decade and professionally and kind of watching it as an amateur observer longer than that. And for a long time, it seemed that the discussion was, is this something that we want to do or should do? And if it was, it was figured out how to be paid for. And the state and local governments in particular are understanding that that's not the way they can think about it anymore. Are you starting to sense that shift inside federal agencies, or is that still something that's yet to happen?
So I would break out federal agencies in a couple different ways, only from the aspect that I think information technologists in the federal agencies have seen this trend coming for a while, only because they get to see all the old stuff and they see all the new stuff everybody wants to do. So they have been observing this and trying to navigate this water for several years.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think you're seeing the paradigm shift now is on the program side of the house, where people are really looking at these programs and saying, you know, why are we funding this program? Should the government really be involved in this particular aspect of that program?
Mm-hmm.
What is the right level of federal government involvement? You know, should it be at state and local level, or should it even be out in industry? You know, dare I say, and I didn't go into this, but there's a lot of things that are out there that people are now looking at. What is the optimum way the federal government should be looked at and what services they should do? Gosh, that sounds a lot like A76.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting stuff. The last prediction on the list is accountability and results, and it ties in with all of the things that we've already talked about. If you had to pick one element of the accountability and results conversation, which we could spend the whole rest of the show doing, what do you think is most likely to happen, to be done, to be mandated in 2011 that if I'm sitting in an agency, I should be make sure that I'm really ready to do?
I think that agencies really need to be ready to justify the program. So I'm going to flip this around a little bit. So the new act, the Government Performance and Results Modernization Act, has passed to you know, next generation of GPRA, really talking about programs and results. The big game changer, I think, in that is elimination of programs.
Mm-hmm.
And when Congress actually eliminates a program or asks why a program shouldn't be eliminated, that's going to be the big game changer. When have you last heard of us actually shutting things down or turning something off? It's very little. And that's where the big deficit reduction, that's where the big cost savings are coming. We can't keep everything going, the old and the new. We're going to have to shut things down.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate your time today, Karen. I appreciate the times that you've been on the show. And in 2010, and it'll be great to continue to have you on in 2011 and get your insight into these things. Your knowledge and your experience are really a terrific addition to the show.
Well, thanks for asking me. It was fun.